my name's Matt Campbell. My brother Jeff was unfortunately killed on 9/11. He was on the 106th floor of the North Tower. And ever since he finally had his first inquest back in 2013, I've been wanting to reopen his inquest because they didn't look at any of the evidence of the use of explosives and incendiaries, which I believe brought down the towers.
Okay, before you go into that, can you just explain, because in the UK, an inquest is for a specific individual death. Obviously, there's lots of people that died in the Twin Towers, as there are in many of these terror attacks. An inquest isn't really the appropriate, certainly in British law, even though they're being used more and more. Surely something like a public inquiry or maybe, you know, the equivalent in the United States would have been much more appropriate to have.
I think it would have been a lot more appropriate. I mean, it actually ended up being a joint inquest. There was 10 victims that were all considered at the same inquiry, if you want to call it that. But it was kept within a very limited scope of an inquest, you know, which is basically, you know, who the deceased was, where, when, and how did they die. But it's really the last part that they didn't address at all.
Hang on, 3,000 people died. How come only a handful are together in this inquest?
Well, that's because of just the nature of how it works in the UK. Because 10 British victims were identified and, most importantly, their remains were repatriated back to the UK, that automatically, because their death was, you know, violent and unnatural, it automatically triggered an inquest.
Oh, okay. So this is just the UK people?
Yes, yes. So, I mean, out of the 67 Brits, I mean, I don't know exactly how many have been identified, but only 10 have been identified, to my knowledge, and had their remains repatriated back. I mean, some may have chose to have been buried in the States, and that wouldn't have automatically triggered an inquest. But that's basically why my brother had an inquest, was because over several years, we had remains identified and repatriated over here. And that was similar for other people who had lost loved ones, 9 other victims.
I mean, for many people, this is ancient history. Why is it still dragging on?
Well, that's a good question. I mean, you've only got to look at the legal cases that are still going on in the States. You've got the never-ending Guantanamo Bay which is still in pre-trial, and they're discussing doing plea deals on that. But that's, you know, been going for at least, well, 10, if not longer, 15 years. There's the Saudi lawsuits, of which my father is part of the Motley Rice lawsuit. You know, that hasn't even started, and that's been going for 21 years. You know, in terms of there being any – closure's an odd word, but in terms of there being any sort of legal examination of what went on, the events that day, you know, nothing's been done at all. And I know that there's a lot of frustrated families, even if they don't necessarily hold the same views that I do, who just don't feel that there's been any justice. And, you know, yes, it has been a long time, but I can assure you, you know, the ripples from that, the events that day that took my brother and everyone else's loved one doesn't stop.
Say, for example, the Crown Prosecution Service was after you for something that you didn't cooperate and didn't actually take this anywhere for 22 years. I think it might be a different story. It seems that when it's the government, when it's the officialdom, that these things can drag out for a tremendously long time. And, of course, I mean, that must have had an effect on you, Matt.
Yes, it has. I mean, I'm lucky, I guess, that I'm young enough that I've still got the energy to fight this. You know, I've spoken to some relatives in victim family members in this country who broadly support what I do. But they're, you know, they're in their 70s and 80s and they don't want to take this fight because it's not how. Well, they just don't want to do it in, I guess, their last remaining years to be fighting something that they don't see, you know, any result coming out of it. But, you know, that's all part of lawfare, whatever they call it. They try and exhaust you both, you know, time wise and, you know, money wise, which unfortunately, you know, has been going on to a certain extent with us having to take the action we're doing now, you know, in us trying to get my brother's inquest reopened. Should I update you with where we are? Because I think we probably spoke about
this. Yes, please do, yeah.
Yeah, a couple of years ago. So 2 years ago, we submitted under Section 13B of the 1988 Coroner's Act a petition to the Attorney General to reopen my brother's inquest. And it's a well-trodden route. You know, a lot of people have go down this route where, you know, perhaps someone's died in a prison cell in, you know, a natural circumstances. And, you know, the initial inquest perhaps, you know, didn't look at everything and new evidence has come to light, or, you know, there wasn't enough inquiry at the first inquest. And so anyway, there's this mechanism, which we are using. Or tried to use. So we submitted a 2,500-page application to the Attorney General. We had 6 expert testimonies, and we had 5 eyewitnesses who were witness to explosives and explosions that day. Some of whom were actually, well, they were first responders, but some of them were like in the police force, etc. We waited, you know, basically. No response from them. We continued to do what's called addendum submissions. So as other cases, perhaps other inquests had been successful in reopening, we supported our application with just examples, you know, precedents where, you know, we are well within our rights to get this inquest reopened. And so we were fairly confident. Fast forward, well, very slowly to June this year, June 27th, I think. We got a response from the Solicitor General, so I guess on behalf of the Attorney General, basically denying our application. And the only course of action we have, because it's a, you know, I guess it's an authority that's made a ruling, is we've gone down what's called the judicial review route, which, you know, it's not cheap. We've had to raise a lot of money to engage the barrister's services to challenge the decision, the unlawful and irrational decision of the Attorney General. And so it just happened by coincidence. On Monday the 11th this year, so 22 years on, we actually submitted our, it's what's called a pre-application protocol, and the grounds, the substantive grounds, for why we are applying for judicial review. It's essentially a warning shot to the Attorney General, you know, pre-litigation, that these are the grounds we're going to be arguing against. It's clear we're going to win, you know, back down. And they have 14 days to back down. So by Monday, we should have heard from them. I'm hoping it's positive and they do decide to back down and change their decision. And if they don't, we will be filing in the High Court on Tuesday the 26th.
Wow, well, more power to your elbow. What are your main arguments?
It's essentially the test that they're supposed to apply. I mean, they're supposed to apply the law in, you know, in making those decisions. The language, I mean, the letter was very brief that they gave us. In fact, there was no real detail as to why they were denying our application. They had strange phrases like, you know, the attacks were thoroughly investigated by the FBI and the National Commissioner, you know, the 9/11 Commission report. And these conclusions are widely known and accepted, and it was reasonable for the coroner to rely on them. I mean, apart from the fact, you know, they aren't widely accepted by a lot of people, what was actually placed in front of the coroner in terms of evidence that, you know, ultimately she's looking at the causation and why and how my brother came about his death. There was no evidence whatsoever about how the towers came down in either the one page, I may add, FBI investigation that was put in front of the coroner, and nor in the 2 pages of cut and paste, which primarily was just a timeline of events from the National Commission report. And so it's just, you know, to say that they rely on that, where it's, they're not actually offering any evidence whatsoever. We know that there was no inquiry done at all. I mean, nothing in terms of how my brother came about his death. There's also irrational things that the Attorney General said about how, you know, the expert eyewitness evidence and expert evidence about pre-planted explosives would make a meaningful difference to the verdict or shed further light on how the deceased came about his death. I mean, these are irrational things to say, because clearly if explosives were used, and you know, they may have actually directly killed my brother, or certainly brought down the tower, which then obviously killed him along with others, to say that it would not make a difference to the verdict is ridiculous. They also made other arguments, which is things like the assessment of the hypothesis of whether the Twin Towers collapsed due to pre-planted explosives is simply beyond the scope of an inquest and would be unlikely to yield a different conclusion or narrative verdict. I mean, again, that's just ridiculous. You know, it's well within the responsibilities and capabilities of a UK coroner. Their task in every case is to examine, you know, in a full, fair and fearless way, an inquiry of all the facts and circumstances that may show what caused, you know, any given death. And obviously, in this case, my brother. Basically, the statement they gave us, or the reasons why, is just it's unlawful and irrational, because it's not within a reasonable range of responses to the evidence that we presented. And there's a whole bunch of sort of, you know, very dry legalese arguments that the barristers made as to why, you know, the decision needs to be reversed. So, I mean, right now, you know, like I said, it was sent off on the 11th. They've got 2 weeks to respond. And I'm just, you know, hopeful, because on paper we win this all day long. That they back down.
Well, my evidence was that it's quite feasible that there were pre-planted explosives in the building. I mean, that's not just the obvious, looking at the film of the buildings coming down, evidence. The fact that the fires that were burning due to the aircraft hitting the Twin Towers were almost out, according to the fire brigade, at the time. But that is an interview I did with a guy called Scott Forbes, who was he was due to be in there working, but he had a day off that week in lieu, because he'd been in the Twin Towers in his office at, I think it was Fiduciary Trust he was working at, doing a power down over the weekend because they had they'd switched off the electricity, and he had to actually switch off and safely shut down and then restart all the servers for his company. And he said he saw people going in and out. One of the reasons that he remembers it all is because there was no power in the building, that all the security systems were also not operative, and so people were able to go in and out of the Twin Towers with no security. So I don't know if you've come across his evidence. There certainly is evidence out there, and surely any coroner is going to want to look into things like that.
Absolutely. I mean, I actually met with Scott because I got in contact with him, and I met him in London, I don't know, sort of 5-6 years ago. I mean, sadly, he's passed away, because I was trying to get a sworn affidavit off him as to you know, that power down, because I had contacted the port authorities through a freedom of information request to try and get records of, you know, the notice that would have been sent to all their tenants. But unfortunately, they said to me that all their records were had been destroyed after the attack, so they don't have any. Well, that's what they told me. But yeah, I mean, you know, sadly, I said he's passed, but I did actually get to meet and speak with Scott, because, you know, that certainly that's it was plausible that they could have been planted that weekend. I mean, it didn't form any part of our evidence that we put forward, but you know, but there's lots of stories like that. I think sniffer dogs were pulled off on the Thursday for that weekend as well. There's all sorts of stories doing the rounds about that. But yeah, so I'm at this kind of crazy point right now where I'm sort of sitting here, you know, waiting to hear from the Attorney General, knowing that, you know, that's going to set the path that I have to follow and fight for the next, you know, potentially 6-9 months, however long it's going to take. And it's been a busy time. I've been involved on a slightly different matter with a new film that's come out. About Graham McQueen's life, who's a sort of key 9/11 researcher, both on the anthrax attacks, but also, in particular, the eyewitness statements of first responders who were witness to, they either use words like explosions, explosives, bombs, etc., in their testimony that was taken from them in the days after 9/11. And so my actual brother-in-law is the editor and co-director, along with Ted Walter, who's from an organization called the International Center for 9/11 Justice, IC911.org. And I did some a little bit of additional research for the film. But I'm actually going to be speaking at an event the end of this month, on the 30th, in Camden at the Pirate Castle, strange place in Camden, where there's going to be a showing of the film. I'm going to be talking and obviously giving an update of hopefully good news from what we've heard from the Attorney General. And there's also the propaganda expert, Piers Robinson, who's speaking there. So anyway, you can find tickets for it on Eventbrite. If you just search for either my name, Matt Campbell, or I think it's called The Official Story Versus the Truth. But, you know, it's the run up to the anniversary is always busy for me. I mean, less so, I get less requests from mainstream media now, to speak, probably because they know what I'm going to talk about. But it is always, there's always something going on, and this year's, you know, not been any different. And, it's just obviously if you've got this additional, thing of all the legal stuff going on in the background that's, on my mind constantly at the moment.
Well, it's amazing. It's such a long time. It's down the line. You know, I'm sure your brother would be very appreciative of all this if he was still with us. What was he actually doing in the World Trade Center? What was his job?
Well, yeah, I mean, this is kind of, it's one of those things. It wasn't his place of work. He worked for Reuters and he was sort of in Midtown. He was actually there, to do some networking. It was at the Risk Waters conference, the British firm that, you know, it was an exhibition and, you know, conference, I guess. It was an opportunity for him to basically network and meet with people from, my world, because I worked in the city. I worked in IT, and, he was only really there, because we were looking at him heading up our, New York office. And so, you know, part of the reason why I was there is purely because, you know, we had plans to expand our company. But, you know, sliding doors and all that, my co-director was supposed to have been there. He was already in New York. And on the morning of 9/11, he got an urgent call from a client of ours who had some issues with their trading system. And so he went up to Midtown to go and work on that. Else he would have been, you know, at the event conference. You know, it's just one of those things, isn't it? And I'm sure there's lots of stories like that. People who, you know, perhaps went to go and get a cup of coffee rather than walking into the building. And, you know, I'm sure there's lots of stories like that.
I'm sure, yeah. But what about the cost? Because we used to have this thing called legal aid, which would make sure that that money was no impediment to justice in Britain. It was slowly dismantled, and the latest was by Tory Justice Secretary Ken Clark back around about, I think it was about 2012, 2013. You know, enormous cuts to legal aid. How much does this cost, and how have you managed to pay for it? Because that would be an insurmountable hill to climb, a mountain, really, for most people.
Well, yeah, I mean, I don't have the money to do it. Legal aid, it wasn't really an option. I mean, I inquired at various charities like Inquest, and it's just too much of a complex case for them to take on. I'm not sure if you can get legal aid for judicial review for what we're doing, but you know, I mean, the only reason I've been able to do this is through the generosity of people who, you know, care about the truth, care about what went on that day, and, you know, believe that we haven't heard the truth. And this is only just one aspect of the attacks. So I've been very lucky. You know, people all around the world have donated. There's a donate button on IC911.org, which, you know, I'm hoping we don't need to keep pushing that, because I'm hoping that the Attorney General backs down and we can actually go ahead and get a new inquest for my brother. And it would be, you know, the first time that evidence of the use of explosives and incendiaries would ever be put into a court. You know, because every other attempt to do this has failed. And I said even sort of more accepted, I guess if you want to call it that, court, legal cases, whether it be the Guantanamo Bay hearings or the Saudi lawsuits, that they're not going anywhere, you know. And so this to me is the first opportunity to get, you know, I call it sort of 9/11 litigation, to actually get it into a court, even though it's in the UK and it isn't in the US. But I think that works in my favour to some extent.
Yeah, well, how much, can I ask, how much, you know, has been ploughed into this legal case so far?
It's horrendous. I mean, it's proper lawfare. So the initial application, you know, which we worked on for about a year, was £80,000. The judicial review and filing is £48,000. But I know from speaking to someone who, an unrelated case, but they have been through a similar, you know, set of obstacles placed for them through the legal system. They actually went through the judicial review process. At every single stage, the other party could have capitulated, but they didn't. They eventually won their case, but it took 5 years and £200,000. And that, to me, is just disgusting that, you know, whether you've got the money or not, that's how much you have to spend and how much time needs to pass before you get any semblance of justice. But I said, I'm very lucky and grateful that people have been supporting my fight.
I mean, it's obviously really important that the truth comes out about the September the 11th attacks. What was really going on there? There's lots and lots of questions still remain unanswered. But what about the wider geopolitics of this, Matt? You know, looking at this 22 years ago and the effects around the world, I mean, what we saw was this so-called war on terror. We're now seeing various terrorist organizations sanctioned, such as the Hezbollah, which is part of an elected group in Lebanon. We're seeing the Wagner Group, we're being told that they are now a terrorist organization, which is a private military company working with and for the Russians, very much like our own private military companies do, and yet they're not called terrorist organizations. We've also seen the Republican Guard Group in Iran, which is a military, part of their military. They're called a terrorist organization. So this whole idea of terrorism seems to be slowly being increasingly politicized every month, every year.
And it's convenient because it perpetuates and keeps the war going, doesn't it? And all the money that gets piled into that and the budgets that are raised for it. You know, I looked at the is it the Watson, the, you know, the cost of war, you know, the Watson Institute, Brown University, you know, the number of people either killed or displaced is something like 4.5 million, and it's crazy that this has all come or started from those events on 9/11. I mean, the actions of the US and the UK was what initially, I guess, just sort of woke me up from my shock. And that's really, you know, what started me questioning everything, was just the insanity of what we did and who we went after immediately after 9/11.
Well, what about, I mean, you're talking about Afghanistan after going after bin Laden.
Yeah.
I mean, that obviously.
And Iraq, which was, you know, completely unrelated.
Yeah. Can you just remind us of the timing of your talk in London and also this bit about this film and maybe how to donate too?
Yes. So the events at the Pirate Castle in Camden in London, if you go onto Eventbrite and you search for the official story versus the truth, or just put in my name, Matt Campbell, you'll find it. It's on Saturday, September the 30th. It's about sort of 1:30 to 6:30. I'm talking, and obviously we'll know exactly what's going on with the judicial review situation. Piers Robinson will be talking about propaganda, and he'll be covering topics such as JFK, 9/11 and COVID. And we're also showing the new film, 9/11 documentary called Peace, War and 9/11, which is, it's basically Graham McQueen, the late Graham McQueen. He died, I think April, this year. And it's basically, you know, a documentary about his work. And so in particular, it covers, the research that he did, 9/11, about the first responders and how, you know, it's like a third of them all reported bombs, explosions, explosives, etc. But also it talks about the anthrax attacks. But really, his film is about war triggers, and it talks about, you know, that the various war triggers that you have. You have natural ones, you have kind of managed ones, and you have manufactured war triggers. And he's very much of the opinion, or was of the opinion, that 9/11 was a manufactured war trigger. And like I said, you know, it would be a good day. And it's just a mixture of keeping people up to date with what I'm doing. An opportunity to see the film on a big screen. It's had a couple of premieres in New York and in, Canada, where Graham was from. But, it'd be nice to show it in London. So, donation website, sorry. If you go to ic911.org, there's a big donate button there. Even if we get the okay to go ahead, we still need to raise money because we need to actually go into the coroner's court and obviously, yeah. But let's not get ahead of ourselves. I'm just waiting to hear the decision.
I'm sure some listeners will be thinking, well, this whole war on terror, 9/11 is old hat. Actually, it's all been completely surpassed and overtaken by the confrontation in Ukraine.
That's ongoing now. I mean, I'm interested to hear Piers Robinson's thoughts on that on the Saturday. I mean, it's Graham McQueen talks about it. It's a system. It's not really even a process. It's just, you know, it's never ending. And so, yes, sadly, right now we have what's going on in Ukraine.
Yeah, well, isn't it strange how wars used to be sort of for a short period of time and then they'd be over. And now it's almost as if almost every new war seems to be dragging on forever and ever, whether it's Iraq or Afghanistan. I suppose we should be grateful. It was only, 20 years or so in Afghanistan. Mm-hmm. You know, these long-term wars seem to be very good for the military industrial complex, the arms manufacturers, but they don't actually seem to be being won in many cases. So there's this whole concept of the sort of lose scenario where people go into, particularly the West, goes into these wars with no real apparent intention of winning. Anyway, maybe the same is with Ukraine too. And maybe the same was it was with the war on terror. Who knows? Anyway, Matt Campbell, thank you very much for joining us once more, and all the best with your judicial decision, which we will report when we hear it.
Cheers. Thank you, Tony.